On this week's episode of the Wealth Collective podcast, we take a look at superannuation strategies you should be thinking about for 2021. We take a look at some of the most uncommon strategies that some people mightn't be aware of, but also what you should be thinking about regarding superannuation as we head into the new year. Enjoy!
Everything we talk about on today's podcast is general advice only because we don't know your individual personal situation. Before you act on anything we've spoken about, you should chat to your financial advisor, and if you don't have one, feel free to reach out to us. Now, on to today's show.
Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of the Wealth Collective podcast. I'm Zach Masters, and today, as always, I'm joined by Pete Pennicott from Flicata and Anthony Malvaso from AGM Advisory Group. How are we going, gents?
I'm feeling extra special today. Another year older, so I know it's just
occasion. Happy birthday to number. Pete.
But you know, how many times he's turned 25? It's good.
12, apparently.
Yeah, old birthday boy. So I'm going to really bring it today. High energy.
What have you got planned for tonight?
We're going out without the kids for the first time in, I think, old Remy is? So probably 3 years.
Since you were 25?
Yeah, maybe that's why I'm sort of reminiscing about those younger years of staying up past, 8 p.m. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. I'll probably fall asleep in my sort of dish.
What about you, Anthony? How have you been? You got a Christmas shopping done already?
No. As I said on a few podcasts, I'm waiting till the 23rd. I've just been very busy with work, trying to get a bit of exercise. There's been a few Christmas parties around the work scene. Just trying to balance out the year out to finalise work and planning a nice Christmas and New Year break.
Yeah, perfect. So with the year coming to a close, we always start to look forward and plan for next year like we did on last week's episode. But this week we're going to be talking about super strategies for 2021. So superannuation is an area that's constantly changing and evolving. The legislation constantly changes. So that means that there's always opportunities and new strategies coming up that people should be aware of. But I might start with you, Pete. And what should people be thinking about in regards to super for 2021?
Well, good year not to be looking backwards, because I think we can leave the hot mess that is 2020 in the rear vision mirror. Thank you very much. For me, it's not just necessarily what's changed. So I think if you just sort of look too much about for changes, I think you might sort of miss some of the gold that already exists and maybe you just sort of haven't been aware of it. So I'd be looking at revisiting, like, how far away from preservation age are you? Because I think that sort of gives you an indication or a guide about how hard you can put the accelerator down on super contributions. Because super is awesome. It's a great tax structure, one of the best, and that's why it's so hard to get money into it, and there's limits on how much you can have in there. But you need to assess, how long do you have to lock up that money for? What's your current financial position? Like, do you have surplus funds? What's your income? What's your marginal tax rate? All those sort of things for your whole household. So that's what I'd be thinking about in 2021, just sort of doing a complete stock take and go check in, because a few things may have changed. And if ever there's a time to sort of be making the most of superannuation, I think next year is a nice launching pad.
Definitely. What about you, Anthony? What should people be thinking about?
I think similar to what Pete said, but it's like any year, are you invested appropriately? But that depends on how far you are away from preservation age. Are you contributing as much as possible? How much are the insurance premiums affecting your balance? Because that can be a big effect, and that's something
probably
else.
Probably a lot.
And that's something definitely should be looked at on a yearly basis. But one thing that's happened, a lot of people did do this due to the COVID-19 pandemic, was take 10 grand out. So probably look at seeing how you can make up that balance, because taking 10,000 out, and I believe it was at a time where it was a few sharp market movement, you just don't know what effect that had on in the long term. So definitely want to look at making that up as soon as possible, if you're in a position to do that, yeah, of course.
Definitely. And I agree with what you guys have said. I think it's important to look at what stage you're at in life, what are your goals. I think it's always important to review your super and see if there's been any fee changes or, in those emails you get where you get a new PDS sent out, have a quick skim through and see if there's any major changes towards what you're invested in or what if the fees have changed dramatically, or the, as we said, or Pete alluded to quickly then, insurance premiums are going up, and they're going up pretty quickly and pretty substantially at the moment.
That's why I was late to this this podcast recording, because I was on the phone to someone who just got a 30% increase on their annual premium, which is, yeah, it's a rude Christmas present that a lot of people are going to be getting soon, but also it's going to carry forward into, I guess, next year and beyond. So definitely lift up the hood, because you don't want that getting deducted. And yeah, where's it going to be funded from? You know, if you've only got one investment option, it's potentially going to sell to any growth assets to fund that as well. So yeah, just be really careful.
Definitely. So I guess what I might do next is pick your brains for what's one of your favorite super strategies for 2021 that not too many regular Australians are aware of. So I might get you to kick us off, Pete.
What is a regular Australian? Hey, this is very easy.
Well, I'll say if like the average punter off the street came in and started speaking to you, they'd go, oh, I didn't know about that.
Pretty much everyone I speak to knows every superannuation rule that exists. So,
Someone with an account.
Yeah. One of my favorite ones, which I really love, is spouse contributions. Because often there's obviously a financial controller and a main income earner a lot of the time in a family, and they get most of the focus on them in terms of financial strategies, superannuation strategies, most of the contributions. So it becomes really lopsided. And we often forget about the, you know, low income earning or sort of non-working spouse, especially through those years where you sort of, you might just be taking time out of the workforce. So you might be sort of on maternity leave or just taking time out, one of you, and this could be either sort of parent. But what it allows you to do is get a tax offset. Tax offset's much better than a tax deduction. So tax deduction, you get a percentage back of that amount, whereas a tax offset is dollar for dollar. This one is, yeah, if you've sort of got a spouse that's earning under $37,000, put $3,000 in, $540 tax offset back. So pretty big bang for your buck in terms of percentage return. And you know, you do these things and repeat it on an annual basis, it's it'll add up really, really quickly over the years. So yeah, really, really good one. So I'd be looking at that as a nice one. And probably, you know, I know we're talking about 2021, you can fit two of these into 2021. So you know, for $6,000, you're going to get, you know, $1,080 back in tax offsets. I don't know. Try and beat that, gentleman.
Yeah, very good. What have you got, Anthony?
What has been one? Laid down to
you? Withdraw another $10,000.
Okay. Yeah. put it in as a spouse contribution. I don't think that's going to be very much frowned upon. I would not be encouraging that.
Along with the insurance premiums increases, yeah, your balance might dwindle away very quickly. I'm not sure if this is something that a lot do know about, but there's a downsizing contribution. As you both know, but a lot of people may not, after 65, and if you're not working, even if you are, it is limited, it can be quite tough, but if you're not working, you're pretty much done with adding money to superannuation. What the ATO did bring in, or the government, I should say, is if you do downsize on your home, you can make up to $300,000 contribution to super. And it doesn't count towards your caps. And this can move money from your principal residence into a tax-effective environment such as superannuation, which you can generate a tax-free income stream in retirement as a pension. So that's something that you can really build your balance. This is something, obviously, for people that are on the later stages of their superannuation lives, span, but it's definitely something that can be beneficial to a lot of Australians out there.
Yeah, definitely. And that one, the big one with that one too, is if you're in a couple, it's $300,000 each. So essentially you can be getting $600,000 into the superannuation environment, which as you're heading into retirement, or if you're already in retirement, it's a huge positive, especially if you're at the stage of your life where you can't get any more contributions into super. So that might be one way that you can get in.
And I was just going to say, there's many people who have got, they've got their super and they've got their home and maybe some cash in the bank, and if there's no areas where they're generating an income stream from anywhere, any other environment, their superannuation balance is going to dwindle, dwindle away a lot quicker than they need, this is a place where this is an area where you can add funds from a non-income producing asset such as a principal residence to an area where you can generate an income stream and fund those living expenses.
Yeah, and it doesn't even need to be, you don't actually have to downsize. So you just have to sell your principal place of residence. Like you could buy another house that's worth more potentially, and you might have some cash savings that you just don't, you just can't get into super. And this can be a way that you can work around that and get them into super as well.
Yeah, very good. And I forgot with my, what I remember from
he's back.
Anecdotal evidence. I just had to get the dog out of the office. I was like, so make sure you're letting your accountant know you're making these contributions. So any contributions you need to claim a tax deduction for or a tax offset, make sure you let your accountant know, because it doesn't just magically happen, unfortunately. So you need to, you know, it's one thing to get it into the fund and code it correctly, but you do need to make sure it's reflected on your tax return. They stand out pretty well in terms of offsets and deductions. So just make sure you're checking that and have a yak to your accountant when you go do your annual return.
Definitely. So the one the one that I've got is the First Home Super Saver Scheme. So I know we've harped on a little bit about this, but I still find that whenever I'm talking to young people that are looking to buy their first home, they have not heard of it or are unaware of it. So the First Home Super Saver Scheme essentially is what you can put in $15,000 each over two separate financial years, so $30,000 in total, as a concessional contribution, so claim the tax deduction from that. And the money gets put into super. You get a guaranteed rate of return, which is around about the 5% mark at the moment. And then once you are ready to buy a home, you can pull those funds out. So the $30,000 plus the interest that it's earned. So this is like almost a no-brainer for those of you that are working and are sure that you're going to buy your first home. And if you're part of a couple, you can both do it. So that means that essentially you claim the tax deduction. So you're going to get extra money back in tax that can be used for your deposit, but your money is also going to be earning a lot more than what it would be in a bank account at the moment as well. So this one I find is, it's almost a no-brainer. The only times where it mightn't work is potentially if you're still not 100% sure you're going to buy a house, because then it's left in a super environment. So if you're a younger person, that mightn't be ideal.
What's this, Zachary? Make sure you make this very clear. So if you don't buy a property, what happens with the funds then?
Well, it stays in the super environment. So there is ways to get it out and pay tax fund as well. But you're making a contribution to super. So the super accessibility around it still potentially applies.
That's a nasty sting in the tail if you sort of imagine that. You get a job sort of working overseas or something. Catch you later. Money's stuck in there.
Yeah, so it's not the end of the world in terms of it's still in
worth-producing
asset, and it's in a likely a more tax-favorable environment. Yeah, in the long run. But that mightn't be ideal for what you want or need the funds for at the time. So it's got to be aware of that.
Yeah.
But that's where, I find that if you are working and your marginal tax rates, above the 0% mark, then potentially this makes sense, because you're going to get the tax saving. You're going to get the funds earning money that, potentially they're not earning in a bank account at the moment, given the interest rate environment we're in. And then you can pull them out, even if the money has dropped in your super. So even if, the market's gone down since you put the contributions in, you still get that guaranteed rate of return. So the government guarantees that rate, and you pull it out from that. So that's a really good one that I think not enough people probably know about at the moment. It's just an easy win. Like, there's not too many downsides to that one, unless you choose not to go ahead and buy the property. But even then, it's not the end of the world. You've still got your money in there working for you. Is there any other ones that you think you'd like to touch on before we move on to the next part?
So many. You could go on for hours. I don't know how long
I think we covered every different generation there, because a lot of people do make the spouse contribution is sort of, you're 40 to 50, 35 to 40, 35 to 50 age range. Obviously, first home saver scheme is more of a younger generation, and obviously the downsizes for the retirement. So sort of covered most generations there.
Yeah, very good. The other one that I thought I should mention, which is fairly new, is the catch-up concessional contributions. So the catch-up concessional contributions mean that since the 2018-19 was the first financial year where you could accrue unused cap amounts. So this can be really beneficial, especially if you're starting to head towards retirement, where if you haven't utilized your full $25,000 in previous financial years, then those will start to carry forward. So you can start to make, say, like, for instance, if you had $20,000 of unused cap left for the previous 2 years, you could do a concessional contribution of $45,000 and claim the tax deduction on that full $45,000. So that's one that a lot of people are still unaware of as well. That can be a good way to get money in whilst claiming a big tax deduction for. So especially if you're a higher income earner that hasn't utilized your cap in previous years, or even if you've been off work for a year or two and then come back to work, this can be a good one to use. So that can be carried forward up to 5 years.
And if you're managing like capital gains tax implications, so if you sold an investment property, sold your Afterpay shares that you picked up for $10, any of those sort of things, or what else has skyrocketed lately? Yeah, I don't know. Any global equities you might have bought in March? Yeah. NASDAQ
Tesla.
Tesla shares.
There's also the withdrawal and recontribution strategy, which can help your estate, the potential death tax, where you can take funds out of super and recontribute that as a non-concessional contribution, as an after-tax contribution, and that'll limit the potential tax to the estate. So there's definitely many, many strategies that you can undertake with your superannuation to make it work for you.
I know. So there is so many strategies, and it's just about picking what's right for you. But how can people learn about potential strategies that are available to them, Pete?
The internet, be wary. I think most things, you sort of do your searches, and if Google's not down that day, you can probably, if you want to jump on like DuckDuckGo or Bing
Yahoo.
Or something, Yahoo, I'll show you my age, or AOL, just jump on there. But realistically, I think sort of there's a fair few trusted resources out there. One of the ones I really like that is probably, I don't know, they don't do a great job of marketing themselves, but I think superguide.com.au. Really, really, really
You need a login for that as well?
Not for the beginner's guide.
Beginner's one, yeah.
So before I did check that before I jumped on, because I think really, really good result. There's a paid service for like a full-blown, which we're subscribers to. Fantastic results. Really, really well worded, like quite easy to digest. And I think they're a really good resource that you could call on, and it's updated really quite regularly as well. So if there's anything new or anything topical, it generally surfaces there. And it might be a good place to get started. I'm not sure if they've got free trials or anything like that, but at least the beginner stuff might be a good way to sort of wet your whistle and sort of get started. And maybe if there's anything that's you need to dig a little bit deeper to, it might be worth paying for a subscription.
They do really good case studies as well on that website, so it's easy to step through it.
And at the end, they've got really good contributors, I hear, as well, that sort of contribute to articles on there occasionally. So
I'm pumping his own tires. What about you, Anthony? What other ways can people learn about potential super strategies?
I'd say qualified advisors is probably the best point of call. Obviously, someone who's authorised to provide advice in superannuation. But most super funds, their websites have obviously all information about their particular fund, but also about calculators, contribution calculators. If you add this much and your balance is this, and you put in your age, and at age 65 or a certain age, you'll get this much. Then you have there's obviously the ATO website provides a lot of information that you can base, off contributions that we've been speaking about.
ATO is a hard read, though. I just warn people. It's the go-to resource before making a big decision.
Right.
But wow, I would maybe sort of percolate on other things first and then go to the ATO.
Generally, if you've got a qualified advisor that gives unbiased advice, and it will give you, a good advice that's in your best interest. But then if you speak to a super fund, obviously they're going to be a bit biased about their own solution. So, yeah, the internet can be a useful tool, but it can lead you down the wrong path as well.
Yeah, and like if you are reading online, make sure you're looking at the date the article was produced or the late date the article was last updated. So if it wasn't in the last 12 months, I would be really, really wary because, you know, it's not the problem, not the fault of the publisher of whoever's put that out there. It was current at the time, but just make sure you're not, you know, you're not sort of consuming information that is no longer relevant or sort of up to date with the current legislation. So, yeah, that's a little trap for people out there. What about you, Zach? Where do you direct people or at these barbecues that you're always talking about finance?
So I find that Money Smart's like a decent website. So Money Smart has a lot of good strategies and ones. The only thing is it's quite basic. So in terms of,
I reckon that's one of the best websites out there. It's a whoever's created that, like bravo, because that's a really, really good sort of source for knowledge. And it is, I think it's a starting out point. But yeah, good.
If there is like if you are in an industry fund or something like that, like they have advisors you can call and speak to and ask questions about as well. So you can, and a lot of the times, if there's a specific contribution that you're interested in. You Google that, and a lot of the time your particular industry fund or whatever fund you're in will have an article on it or details about it as well. So a lot of the time they have information too on there. So that can be a good resource as well. But Money Smart's the one that I usually send people to go and have a read through and see how it works. So before we wrap up today's episode, Pete, have you got a final tip
before we finish up? We're wrapped up. probably one that I didn't think of earlier that has come to me, which we use in a few interesting situations, is like, you know, when you're doing concessional contributions, split it to your spouse. And I know I'm sort of focusing a lot on the spouse here, but you know, I think that's they don't get enough of the love in terms of super strategy. So what splitting concessional contributions to your spouse means, you can't do it all. You can't sort of put 25,000 in, split 25. So you can only do 85% of it because the 15% tax needs to stay as already paid. But what it means is you actually shift it from your account to your spouse's account, which is pretty exciting because it means that you're able to get that sort of that tax benefit too, but you might equalize your accounts more. So if there's a disparity between your two accounts, you might change it up. And that might be a big deal because one of you might be close to the $1.6 million cap. So that might be something that you go, hey, look, you know, if I keep going on the trajectory I'm going, I'm going to hit the $1.6 million cap and you're not. So you want to, with some forward planning, just keep, you know, trimming that and sort of shifting across to your spouse's account. The other one is like, you know, you might want to be funding insurance premiums for a non-working or a sort of a low-income earning spouse that has, you know, taken time out of the workforce or, you know, those sort of things. Really, really good. Also Centrelink ages as well. So obviously if you're underage pension age, but one of you is potentially going to be eligible for age pension, you might want to start sort of directing that so it boosts their super, so it's not accessible for assets test purposes. That's a nice little one that you can squirrel away funds so you don't lose them. And obviously, you know, keep in mind, you are putting money in someone else's account, so you might want to, you know, check on the stableness of your relationship after COVID. So just make sure you're happy that those funds are over there. And the other one is like, flip that around the other way. Well, what if one spouse is going to get to preservation age quicker? So you might have, you know, a spouse that's, you know, 5, 10, 20 years older than you. Well, you might sort of direct money into their account and go, hey, we're going to, as a household, we're going to get access to those funds quicker. So that's pretty exciting as well. So, yeah, that's a really good one. Like, I think that is a, the spouse, the forgotten person in super strategies.
Well, it becomes,
we can retitle this whole podcast.
Well, it is, it becomes much more important, especially with the $1.6 million, you know, caps and all that type of thing. It becomes a waste then if you've got one member with a huge balance and or one spouse with a huge balance and the other spouse with not much in there, when you could have a lot more sitting in a tax-free or tax-effective environment.
Well, I think that's it, because you want to aim to get the 3.2 in today's terms. You want 1.6, 1.6. You don't makes no sense to pay 15% earnings tax unnecessarily if you had cap available. So, this is not like a click your fingers and solve the problem overnight, but with forward planning, like this is the point of doing projections, doing modeling. Plan ahead, like get these things underway. So it's not like you're not sort of chasing your tail with 1 year to go. Yeah, you put the groundwork in and you've started it all in 2021 because you've listened to the Wealth Collective podcast and they've set you off to a flyer.
Exactly. So before we wrap up, is there any other ones? I know you've got one more potentially, Pete, that you wanted to get in.
I've got heaps. We can talk about super all day. but the big ones are like watch how, you know, ages that you can contribute into super. So they're changing, have been changed recently. So to align with the age pension age. So the work test no longer applies for, you know, up to age 67, which is exciting. There's legislation sort of getting reviewed at some point or sort of get put in force, I'm sure, aligning the, you know, catch up contributions and bring forward contributions in line with that as well. So, yeah, watch this space. It's exciting times ahead, and I think it's important because I think some people's super took a big punch in the gut earlier in the year. A lot of them would have recouped since then had they have sort of held their ground, but there might have been people that have panicked and things like that. So, you know, you can't go and remake those gains again if you've sat out of the market, but what you might be able to do is, you know, put in place some super strategies that are not dependent on, you know, investment market conditions. And what we've gone through today, none of these, we didn't really talk too much about investments. So these are all just really good strategies that are not investment dependent, but, you know, just take into account your personal circumstances. If you're confused, shout out to one of us, like any of us. And I'm sure sort of we'd be happy to take an email and sort of have a yak to people. But yeah, otherwise, very, very good. This is what, second last show of the year.
It's probably, well, have we gotten one out? Because what's it going to be next week? The Christmas Eve? It's going to be Christmas Day next week.
Yeah.
We can put out a Christmas Day episode.
Have you been naughty? Have you been nice? we'll do the Santa's list. We'll just read it out.
Very good. All right. Well, as always, if you've got any questions, email us at connect@picada.com.au or hit us up on any of our socials. Otherwise, we'll likely see you next week. Cheers, guys.
Merry Christmas. See ya. If I don't catch you beforehand.